Ugly, and it's so like unconventional, but it works. Like, obviously you want to clean some things up technique wise, but don't change the throwing motion, because that's just who he is. Like, don't mess him up, because that's what Phillip Rivers was, you know. And I think that's, he hit it right on the head with that ugly ass throwing motion.
I didn't even know he was at Virginia. I remember him at Indiana.
I mean, yeah, Indiana. My bad.
Okay, my bad.
Indiana.
But that doesn't surprise me, that, because like you said, to take that kind of abuse there, but now to come to Washington and have the kind of receiving core that he has now, now he's probably like, well, that ain't no problem. Yeah. I can stand in here now because now I got some dudes that can go get it. So that ain't no problem. Oh, by the way, I just clicked record because I was like, look, this is good stuff. We should have been recording all of this stuff.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I just started just with the Bennett stuff. This is good stuff. This is what the people want, Chris. You got to give the people what they want, man.
Yeah, man. Michael Penix. That dude is special, man. Hopefully he can win the Heisman. I like him more than I like Caleb Williams.
Yeah, give people what they want. That's what I thought about it. I was like, man, I should have just clicked. I said, I don't know when I said it. A couple episodes ago or something. Maybe it was even last year. I was like, I should just start clicking record. And then
right when we go on.
Yeah, because we flow for like 45 minutes. And I'm like, that's like good stuff. Not that the show's not good too once we hit record, but I'm like, that's good stuff too. And we should just be getting all of that stuff out there. So when you was going, I was like, man, I should have did this like 30 minutes ago. I'm like, let me get this last bit on Penix, you know, because you know, people are here for it all, right? Of course they want to hear about the Ravens, but you know, the draft stuff. Anybody who's watched your videos, they know, you know, you up there, man. You know, I'm like, hey, you can have Dan Brugler. Give me Chris Aguilera. That's what I'm like. No disrespect to Dane. Dane is the man. But you know what I'm saying? It's more than one man out there.
to give the people a quick recap, we were talking about the Ravens offensive line. And some of the guys that I've started doing preliminary watches on, and a couple of guys that stood out to me were Troy Fontenot from Washington, and that's how we got to the whole Washington Huskies talk and the Michael Penix talk and talking about his wide receivers and how that room is loaded with playmakers and guys that could go up and catch the ball and, you know, erase bad throws or missed target throws and just be able to scoop them up off the ground, catch them, you know, just straight up catch them off of the top of somebody's head. And, you know, they go about five deep in that wide receiver room of cats that can make those type of plays. So, you know, the Washington Huskies, man, they're definitely one of those teams that I got my eye on this year because I like what they're doing. And it looks like it's just a fun team to root for. You know, just fun. We're talking about Michael Penix, his road to where he's been, where he is now, and it hasn't been an easy one. So he's definitely an easy guy to root for. And when you see him freestyling on the sideline, I just put the little cherry on top.
Man, if we had been doing this right after the Steelers game and you was talking about these wide receivers, people would have been like, right, never. What's his name? The number two? Hold on. What's the other guy's name? Number two? They would have been writing all the names down so they could go and check these dudes out. Fortunately, we doing it after the Titans game. The drops wasn't really an issue after that Steelers game. They'd be like, hold on. Say that again. Name all those dudes again so I can go check them out. But you said you got a video that you're going to do on the guards, right? The guards that you've looked at.
Not a video yet. I did the little article thing.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know how to do the little write-ups. But I'll be doing the videos maybe like about around Thanksgiving time. I just want to get more tape, more 2023 tape, because like I was telling Mike and Kerry, Troy Fontenot, the left tackle from Washington, you know, you watch the 2022 tape of him at left tackle and it's ugly. You know, you're like, nah, this dude has to be a guard. But then you pop in 2023 tape and you see a guy who's just refined now and who is comfortable at that spot. There's still times where, you know, it could look a little ugly, but he's still losing, you know, like it's like they like on the Prospect to Pros podcast, you're losing slow, you know, you're not losing fast. And I was just telling the guys about, you know, how I like offensive linemen who are tryhards as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they're going to battle you tooth and nail. And that's what you have with him. And to me, out of the tackles that I've watched so far, the guards that I've watched so far, he has the most active hands on the offensive line. And I love that about him, because so many times you see dudes shoot their arms out and then they'll try to, you know, reset and get their hands back in the chest plate. He's constantly, you know, hand fighting out there. And I love that. You know, I love that, the hand placement. I love how violent his hands are. So, you know, he made a huge jump, and he's a guy who I think could play left tackle in the league, but I also think he could be a really, really good left guard in the league as well. Troy Fontenot.
Hey, write it down. It'll be in the write-up too, but write it down. we were talking about the Ravens offensive line situation. They're the guards, their tackles, you know, Moses and Zeitler, and then, you know, having that adult discussion about Ronnie. It's like the parents having to sit down and talk. We gotta sit you down, we gotta talk about this, okay? This is serious. You don't wanna have to talk about it, but it's like, all right, we get to the point where we need to talk about this now. So they gotta start, you know, preparing for the future on that offensive line. So it sounds like it's a good class to take some guys, whether it's at tackle or it's guard, both, and start to kind of build out for the future. You know, not necessarily 2024, but getting those guys in, you know, in 2024, and then in 2025, maybe, you know, they're ready to kind of step into some roles, some bigger roles, maybe the starting role. Who knows? But you know, it's fun to look ahead. I know you do it. You're into the draft like all year round, right? You don't just wait until the end like me into the bowl games and stuff. Then I start trying to cram and watch all of these guys.
Nah, definitely a certified loser.
Nah, that makes you a winner in my that you into all year round, because you know these guys. You know these guys, and you know them beyond just this year. You know them 2022, sometimes even 2021, you know, whatever, 2 or 3 years back. So you've got a history in terms of your evaluation on these guys, whereas, you know, somebody like me just coming in at the end, I'm like, all right, let me cram real quick and see what I can figure out about these dudes. But it's something that, you know, we've got to look towards and start thinking about on this team, because, like you said, Zeitler, you know, he's going to be 33, 34. Moses is going to be 33. Ronnie's still young. He'd be 30, but, you know, you can tell injuries are probably kind of having a little bit of a debilitating effect, you know, on some of the things that he can do out on the field. Not everything, but like I said, I think he can still move pretty well, still an athletic guy, but anchoring against power is rough. It's a struggle right now, whether that's in pass protection or the run game. Like, guys just getting under him and driving him back off the ball. It's a struggle right now. And I know he's still coming back, you know, from the ankle he had earlier this season, or knee. Was it ankle or knee? This year,
I think ankle. I don't know.
Yeah. So I try to factor that in. I'm really trying not to be like super, super, you know, negative about it. But
I hope that's it.
Gotta start thinking about the future, man. I mean, that's just the NFL.
Yeah, and then yeah, I mean, even so, like, let's just say his play does pick up, because I mean, it's still early, you know. And what gives me hope with him is that he looked better last year. So I'm wondering if it is that injury from this season that has him kind of not really looking like himself. But also, let's just say he you know, raises the level of play. You still have to, just with the history of Ronnie, you have to start that plan. You know, you can't just be stuck out there and, you know, not knowing what the future holds when it comes to that left tackle spot, because now you got that dude, Lamar. He's locked up and he's paid mm-hmm. for it. He's the most valuable asset on this team. And you have to protect that blind side. You know, I mean, the whole line is important, but that blind side is super, super important to have that dude there that, where you could just set it and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, man, you've seen teams when they didn't address it adequately, when they had a dude at quarterback. Luck, probably the most prominent example. There's a bunch of examples throughout the history of the NFL, but most recently, I guess, Andrew Luck. If, well, I mean, I guess you could say a little bit about Joe Burrow, too, but they did start to kind of address that.
Cam Newton, too.
Yeah. That, you know, these guys, as good as they are, if you don't protect them and they start to get injured, it takes a toll, right? And they end up, you know, kind of maybe degrading a little bit sooner than they should because of just the wear and tear on their bodies from taking hits and getting injured. You know, now, look, I think we've seen early so far with Monken's offense, Lamar, you know, I think, and I guess the numbers have borne this out. I think somebody talked about his time to throw being like the lowest has been in his career, but he's been getting the ball up. You know what I'm saying? So that's another good thing among, you know, several different things we could talk about with this offense, that guys getting open, more guys getting open, and guys getting open sooner. So he doesn't have to hold the ball. He doesn't have to create as much. And he can get the ball out of his hands and let those guys do what they do. It's just a way that you can protect yourself. You see the old, you know, the old heads, right? The old OG quarterbacks who were like the studs, Peyton and Tom Brady. That's pretty much how they protected themselves, was getting the ball out of their hands. I mean, they had some good offensive lines at times too, but they had some years where maybe, you know, it was a little bit down in terms of certain positions on their O-line, and they had to protect themselves by getting the ball out. You know what I'm saying? So that they didn't take them hits. So I think, you know, we've seen Lamar get that ball out of his hands a little more quickly in Monken's offense too. So, you know, it's I was thinking about that Titans game. I know we're going to talk about that. And I was like, and Denard and I were talking about on the Fire Zone show, it's kind of been like this throughout Titans game, which is like another example where I know some people had some issues with the way Monken called that game, but Denard and I were like, look, with the way that their defense was playing in that game, I don't know that I would have called it any differently. You didn't need to do anything sort of out of your character offensively in that game. Your defense was pretty much handling what the Titans were doing on offense. Outside of that 63-yarder, I would say Derrick Henry had like 34 yards. So, I mean, you were handling him. They really weren't, you know, threatening you too seriously in the passing game. Hopkins had, you know, drew a couple flags, a couple catches here and there, but it's not like they were bombing you or anything like that. So it was like, okay, well, look, let's just control the ball. Use the run game to control the ball. We'll throw it when we want to throw it and, you know, take some opportunities to do that. And, you know, let's just keep control of this thing. Go down and get points every time we can. Let's just get points. And we get out of here with a win. Got a little interesting at the end. The Tajay Spears, you know, on that last run, and them getting that touchdown. But
I think Kerry willed that one into existence.
manifested Tajay getting that playoff. So he got a little interesting at the end, but they it never felt like they were out of control of that game. To me, I felt like they were in control of it basically throughout. The momentum swung a couple times, but I don't ever felt like, oh man, they totally like lost control of this game. Like Steelers game, I felt like they lost control at a certain point. I didn't feel like that in this game. Even though that game, they controlled it for a big chunk of it, but it got to a point where it was like, okay, the script has been flipped. And now the Ravens are the one having to scrap and claw and fight to try to get back. That wasn't the case in this Titans game for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I mean, and to me, the biggest thing for me is looking at that Titans front. They got some dudes on that front. And that's not a front that I want to be just overly exposing my quarterback to. Because, you know, we dirty play, but hey, we know what Simmons brings to the table.
Jeff Simmons, like, aka Jeff Galooly. Kneecapping.
They got Harold Landry who's rounding himself back in the form, coming off that injury. Danico Autry, who's a dog. I mean, Tart against the run, that dude is a dog. Like, they got some guys.
One of Mike's boys, too.
Gibson, remember Travis Gibson?
Oh, yeah.
Where he ended up.
They got him, too.
Yeah, so they got some guys that can hunt. So, you know, I came away with the same thing as you, Mike, and as far as the game plan and how they went about it, I really didn't take any issue with it. And, you know, I don't know if you guys want to flip this, you know, since we kind of on it, to talk about the red zone play calling. You know, we'll talk about the game as a whole, but when I look at the plays and look at what was drawn up, you know, to me, the menu is there. I think you might just have to like tweak the ingredients a little bit here and there, add a little bit more spice to this dish, to that dish. But, you know, I saw variety. I saw QB run game. I saw, you know, different personnel packages, you know, motion, all the different things that you want to see. And, you know, it's going to come down to execution and just, you know, sometimes things are just a beat off. I think there was one where they had marked down the seam if protection just held on like a beat longer. And then just other, just small little things that they can you know, just kind of tighten up. But, you know, the way I look at it is we have to still remember that this is a new offense that is kind of trying to build staple plays in certain situations. And the red zone is going to be one of those, you know, big situational things. And, you know, this is a team that's used to a certain offense since, you know, 2018. And so, you know, you get into a third and six in the red zone. And, you know, regardless of what you feel about that previous offense, I bet you there's probably half of the offense, you say third and six in the red zone, they know what the play is going to be. They don't have that in this offense yet. That's still being decided, you know, what the staples are, especially when you have, you know, the wide receiver injuries that you had these guys kind of shuffling in and out, you know, OBJ, Bateman, they're still not full back to being full-time snap players yet. You know, it's just still a lot that they're kind of working through. And so, you know, it's functional right now. I mean, they're still putting up points, not as many as we would like, obviously, but you can see an upward trajectory with what they're doing. You know, overall, but, you know, in the red zone as well, I think you can see some good things. It's just going to come down to, again, getting more comfortable, figuring out what those staple plays are, those staple formations, and, you know, just exactly what it is they want to accomplish. And then also figuring out what it is they can accomplish. You know, we talked about, you know, some of the issues with the blocking that we've seen. Or, you know, maybe it's a player here or there that, hey, this guy isn't serving us, you know, in these certain situations. So, you know, it's a work in progress to try to figure all those things out. But, you know, as far as the play calling goes, I didn't have any issue with the play calling or, you know, formations or just however they went about it.
Nah, neither did I. And I feel like if I was still like doing film breakdowns, it was probably a good opportunity to go through and show some of that stuff just to like put a visual with it to, you know, kind of support it a little bit more. Cause I can sit up here and say, hey, I didn't think it was that bad. But when you add that visual of the film and then you can kind of talk through some of the stuff, then you can kind of explain it a little better and say, hey, look, when they're calling, you know, just pick a run play, right? Where they're calling one of their gap scheme run plays and they got two pullers and, you know, there's a guy, a defensive player from the side of where the pullers are going, who just knifes in there and, you know, takes out that first puller, kind of spills him, right? So now you create a collision with the second guy too. And now running back has got to cut, make a decision before he's ready to make a decision. Look, when that stuff happens, it's not that the concept was bad per se, but the defense played it a little bit better. Sometimes it's a missed assignment, right? Where somebody is supposed to go to a certain person and block them and they don't block. You know, I think Monken talked about it today where he said, hey, look, we got to game plan it better. We got to call it better. We got to execute it better. But he said, if you were to give me a choice and say, do you want to be 60 to 70% touchdown score in the red zone over the season? Or do you want to have some games where you're like 80% and then some other games where you're like 10%? He's like, no, I'd take the 60 or 70 over the course of the whole season because that's consistency as opposed to these, you know, peaks and valleys, roller coaster type games. So he's like, when you look at stats as a whole, it can kind of be misleading sometimes. So, you know, you can think about the games where they were cooking early on and think about some of the plays that they were hitting, you know, just they were executing them at a really high level. I mean, they're connecting on fades. Mark Andrews is dunking on people. The QB run game is hitting almost every time they call it. Like Lamar's not even getting touched on some of those runs. So, like, things were just really, really clicking well, and they were executing really well. But you also got to factor in, you know, what was Tennessee coming into this game? I think they were, like, ranked third or fourth in red zone defense. So not only, you know, the guys that you were mentioning, Kerry, just them being an overall good defense, they were among the best in the league in the red zone in terms of defense. So you factor all that in, right? You look at yourself and say, hey, there's stuff that we can do better. To your point, Kerry, there's stuff that we can, you know, try to hone in on. What's really our go-to? What's the stuff that we can hang our hat on down in that part of the field? And then, you know, again, got to tip your cap to the defense. You can't just ignore. I mean, they're out there playing, so you can't just ignore them, especially when they're really good. They're going to make their plays too. So, you know, I just wasn't worried about it from a design standpoint. Like I always say, I think you can always nitpick individual calls. Like, oh, they should have called this. Oh, they should have had this guy run the ball. So, you know, because there were a couple times I think I saw folks talking about, you know, like running these toss plays with Gus Edwards. And I'm like, well, look, there's different kind of philosophy behind that sometimes. Yeah, I guess knee-jerk, you're thinking, well, yeah, you'd want to run that with a guy that's fast, right? You want Justice to run those, and they run those for Justice. But there's also this school of thought that, number one, Gus, good running back. He can run pretty much anything that you want him to run. He didn't have the juice that Justice has, but he's also 240 pounds. So if I get you out there on a corner, on the perimeter, I kind of like my matchup of my 240-pound running back against a corner trying to tackle him. So, you know, there's different schools of thoughts about it. You know, some people will lean more towards speed. Some other people will, like me, I like a mix. You know, keep it mixed up. Sometimes Justice runs those plays. Sometimes Gus runs those plays. Sometimes Gus runs inside. Sometimes Justice runs inside. I don't think you want to just pigeon your hole into, okay, well, this guy, these are the plays that we run with this guy. These are the plays we run with this other guy. Because then you kind of make yourself a little easier to defend, in my opinion. So I don't know, man. I think just when you go through the coach's film, for me, you usually can always kind of see like the rationalization of it. Like, okay, I can see why you might call this here with this personnel, this specific play. I just have a hard time when I go through it finding stuff like, oh, this is shit. They shouldn't have called it. Like, I don't see that often. I mean, I'm not gonna say it never happens, but I just don't see it that often. Most of the time I'm like, okay, I can see this and I can see kind of what they wanted to happen. And you can also typically kind of see why it didn't happen. And you're just like, okay, Well, that's just something that you got to clean up. You just got to get better at that.
Yes, but specifically to that point, I think the play that annoyed me the most was the Lamar run on a third down. I think it was like in the second quarter. I think
that one from empty. Was he empty?
Yeah, they had Gus lined up on the bottom, and it was just, I was like, what? Like, it was just dead from the start. Like, it wasn't even execution. It was just like.
But if you go back and look at that play, if he keeps that inside behind that second puller, now look, he gonna have to get dirty and like really grind that thing up. But when he tried to bounce it, there's nothing out there. You can't.
Yeah, there was nothing out there. Who was it? Simpson and Ricard coming across, right?
Yeah, there wasn't. So look, don't get me wrong. There wasn't a whole lot there, right? I'm not saying, hey, expect this man to like, you know, rip the suit off and the S on his chest, even though we know he can do it. But for it to have any chance, he needed to stay inside.
Yeah, but once he decided to hesitate, it was game over. But
to your point,
I think
you could have a running back there to give a little bit more of a threat, right? Because if it's just Lamar, then you know what's coming.
Yeah,
you 100% know what's coming.
But to your point, on an execution standpoint, a few plays before that, there's a play where I thought Gus could have got in if Ronnie blocks a linebacker, if he gets a hand on number two. I think Gus is in the end zone there, and that goes to, it was drawn up the right way. It just wasn't executed. And that's a block that you expect Ronnie to make. You know, if you're the offensive coordinator, you expect Ronnie to make that block on a linebacker. And that's the thing that we go to where, you know, both of you guys have said it, where it's execution. You know, the plays are there. You know, if guys are open, if, you know, the holes are there, it's just blocks are not being executed. You know, obviously they're not going to work. You know, I'm not saying anything groundbreaking here, but you see them on film. You see the calls there. And obviously you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to bat, you know, have a crazy, you know, average when it comes to all of these plays, because we know that's not how the NFL works. You know, every play you call is not going to work. There are going to be some that you're like, oh, damn, why the hell did I do that? And then there's going to be some where it's like, oh, damn, we had that. And, you know, I just think it's the growing pains of having this new offense and having so many moving pieces. I mean, what was this, the first game where the offensive line was back together again since week one?
I think so, where everybody was there.
And, you know, it's been a revolving door with the wide receivers when it comes to Bateman and Odell. You know, those guys have been, you know, in and out. So it's still a process that these guys are getting comfortable with. And like Kerry said, you know, they don't really have their bread and butter yet. You know, they're still trying to figure those things out in those key situations. Like Kerry said, on a third and six, you know, like they don't have that just yet. And I think, you know, obviously it hasn't been the smoothest transition yet, but when it clicks, it looks amazing when it clicks. And we've seen little flashes of it here and there and on certain drives. And we're like, ooh, more of that, please. Yeah. And when it clicks, I think it's going to happen.
Yeah. You see those drives you talk about, they go right down the field.
Yeah, when like butter.
Yeah. And I think part of the challenge, too, is having guys in and out of the lineup.
Right.
Like, it's hard to get to that level of, hey, we're clicking and we're clicking consistently when some weeks you don't have Odell. Some weeks you don't have Bateman. Some weeks, you know, offensive linemen are out. You know, it's hard to get to that level. And I think that also plays into the, you know, the hang your hat on stuff. Like, what's your really go-to stuff? Well, if we had all our guys, this might be our go-to play. But that guy's out this week. So, and the play was, you know, he was going to be like the primary read on that play. So, all right, we're not, you know, maybe going to go to that one in that third and six situation in this game because we don't have that guy. So I think, you know, you're not trying to use injuries as an excuse, but it's a factor when these are two, you know, some of the guys who you would really be targeting on these plays, they're not available. It's a little bit different.
And it's not just backup players. It's you talk about you've had your center miss games, you had your left tackle miss games, you've had two of your top wide receivers miss games, you've had both running backs, and then your primary running back be lost for the season, but you had his backups miss time as well, where you have to rely on, you know, Melvin Gordon or Kenyon Drake. So it's that's not easy. It's only been 6 weeks, you know, and they've already gone through all of this on offense. And despite all of that, they still have those flashes where they look damn good.
Yeah, and I want to say, depending on where you look, I might be not looking at the most reliable place, but I want to say they're top 10 in red zone touchdown percentage. I would still say they're like around 58%. They're like ninth, I think, something like that. Now, look, there's some teams with some crazy numbers. Miami's at like 80, which is just ridiculous.
They're playing arena football over there.
Yeah, but 58%, I don't know what the league average is. I'm going to say league average might be like in the 30s or something, 30s or 40s. So 58 is still pretty good. The last couple games, it's dipped. I would say in their last three, it says here they're 46%, so it dipped a little bit. At home, they're 71%. So, you know, they haven't been at home in 3 weeks. So that captures some of those earlier games where they really were clicking. But then Lamar, he's been there the whole time, right? We talked about some of these other people, you know, kind of being in and out. And I want to say he's top five in red zone offense for QBs just because, you know, they're looking at completion percentage. To say he doesn't have like a ton of numbers. I want to say he's like 16 to 23. He's got like five touchdowns, two picks. But, you know, just in terms of accuracy, I think that's pretty much where they're ranking him at on that. So he's you know, been pretty consistent there in the red zone himself from a passing standpoint. And of course, we've seen, you know, the rushing success that he's had down there at some game. So, yeah, I think just the more we see these guys play together, you're going to see those things that have been flashes become more consistent, right? It won't just be like, oh, we had a drive here, we had a drive there. It'll be like consistent across the course of a game, I think. And you're always going to have some where it falls off because it's the NFL. You're playing against the best of the best. So you're not just going to run up and down the field every time you got the ball on offense, unless you're a Dolphins. I guess you could do that if you're the Dolphins. But even they had their game, you know, against Buffalo or whatever. So it's going to happen from time to time. But I think just as all these guys get back, they get healthy, they get that practice. I think that's something that gets slept on sometimes. It's like guys not being able to practice. You say, okay, well, he's back in the game. Okay, yeah, but he's had maybe two or three practices. He's been gone for 3 weeks. He's had two or three practices. Yeah, he's back in the game. That's still probably not enough time to develop the kind of comfort and chemistry that they need. I truly believe, you know, I know people say different things, that interception, the Bateman, I think that's exactly what that was. Because, you know, Lamar took ownership of it as a quarterback supposed to do. He said, you know, hey, I high throw, I missed the throw. But if you go back to the first quarter and that early catch to Zay, that deep out, it's the same route. It's the same route. He runs it, he hooks inside, and then he pivots back outside. And Lamar puts that ball outside on the sideline. That's exactly where he put it for Bateman. Bateman did the same thing, except for the pivot back out. He hooked back inside. He did not pivot back out. So I think Lamar's throwing, they used to call that in the old G-Row 49ers terminology, they called that a hinge route. I don't know what Lamar calls it. But I think Lamar's throwing to a spot because when you watch the one to Bateman, if you, you know, slow it down and watch when he starts to separate to throw the ball, Bateman hasn't come out of that yet. So he's throwing it to a spot, right? He's anticipating, hey, I'm going to put it there. And he was expecting Bateman, in my opinion, to hinge that thing back out to the sideline after he hooked inside because that's what Zay did. It was the same route. But he didn't. He just stayed on the hook. He never worked back outside. So to me, when I saw that, I was like, this is just guys that haven't worked together a whole lot, you know, recently. So I'm not worried about that type of stuff. I'm not worried about the red zone offense, really. Look, we've seen in past years when they've really struggled in the red zone and when we had, like, legit stuff to worry about.
I can pull up some bad red zone calls now. If y'all want me to go back in the vault, we can do that.
Not the vault.
We can definitely do that. I can show you some movement of the pocket that never worked stuff if y'all want to go there.
Sometimes we got short memories, man. We forget because we're seeing what's happening right now. And then you forget, hey, you ain't going to go back that far. If you want to bitch about the red zone, we can give you something. You're just like, hey, this is not a sustainable business model with this, what they're trying to do right now. Whereas the stuff that Mocking's been doing, I like it. I like a lot of it because I'm like, look, the QB run game is smart, right? Because you get the numbers down there, plus it's Lamar. So that's kind of a no-brainer. You know, they're still going to have their power stuff that they run down there. Justice has scored a couple times down in there, you know, on runs, different types of concepts where they can get him on the edge and he can just outrun guys. And then, you know, you always got Mark Andrews down there. So they had one in this game where I thought Bateman was going to get it. I was like, okay, he's going to get this touchdown and that's kind of going to get him going. But it was a blocking thing. He didn't have time. He ran, they call it a dip. That's what they used to call it under G-Roll. I don't know what they call it now. But so you motion in, right, tight to formation, and then you kind of run at an angle, right, in between the hashes, and you act like you're going to hit that little over the route. Over the center curl, just hook up right there. But you put your foot in the ground, and then you get vertical, right? So you turn back to quarterback, you get into that, and then you get vertical. And I'm like, well, that's a touchdown right there. Because the opposite side safety, he was occupied. I think Odell's running a fade. And that's where Lamar actually ended up throwing it. He threw it out of bounds to Odell running that fade. And the safety to the side that Bateman was on, I think he was slanted over towards Andrews, who was running like a little curl sit, right? You kind of run to a corner sit. You run to the corner and you kind of hook it up and sit down in the end zone. So it was there right in the middle of the field, but Lamar had pressure in his face from, I don't remember where it came from, but he ended up just having to kind of chuck it up just to get it out. So, you know, he didn't get sacked. But I'm like, you know, you could see, so that's what I'm saying. You can see the design of some of these plays and how they're trying to get certain guys open, even, you know, whether it's Bateman or Odell or whatever. They're trying to target these guys down there in these situations, but you just need everything to come together, you know, for them to connect on them. So they're close. I feel like when you watch it, especially this game, you can see they were close on a couple things down there. And it's just a combination of not executing and then going up against a really good red zone defense in the Titans. So not that it gets any easier this week coming up against the Lions, you get another good defense, but you also get another chance to work on your execution, right? And see if you can be a little bit better this week. But I really enjoyed the game. Of course, I always enjoy a win, but I was just like, hey, they controlled things on offense. They hit a couple plays, you know, nothing huge or whatever, but you know, a couple explosive plays. And defense is just a continuation, you know what I'm saying, of what they've been doing. We talked about it last night on the Fire Zone. It just, you never want to get bored with it, but it's just like, man, this defense is just solid, man. It's just a solid defense. They don't give up many big plays. You know, there's a couple in this game. But, you know, Denard talked about that one to Henry. He's like, you know, Kyle Hamilton's got to stay where he's supposed to be on that play. He might have got a little overzealous in what he thought that play was going to be. But it turned out that Henry kept the ball, right? They weren't giving it to the end of round guy. And then the Tajay thing, I think, is just one of those situational things where they just call a really good play to a good individual player, and he makes something happen. But that's
so a generational player.
I mean, you know, I don't want to take and put words in your mouth, but you know, when you got a guy like Spears out there, you know, that kind of stuff is going to happen when he gets the ball in his hands. But if you're talking about like two plays, you can live with that, right? On defense, and then six sacks. Come on, Clowney just running through people's chests. Just violence.
Yeah,
he's a violent dude. He is an extremely violent dude, and I love him. Like I think that's how he's always played. Like, I don't think he's doing anything different. You know, maybe he's got a little bit. He might be a little bit more healthy right now, but I don't think he's doing anything any differently than where he's been in other stops. He is a violent dude. right? He's not going to try to shake and bake and do a whole lot of dancing with you. He's just going to try to run through and then pile drive you into the turf when he's like he said, he's looking for kill shots. He said on Tyus Bowser show, he's like, hey, that's that. It's the gift and the curse, really, right? It's when it, when you connect, it's a beautiful thing, but sometimes you can miss. But that's his mindset. He's looking for kill shots. You can see it when he's out there playing. It's like he is trying to like just destroy these people.
Man, I love it. I wasn't too sure what to expect with the Clowney signing because you know he's been injured and stuff like that. So I was a little reluctant to be, you know, on board with the whole thing and be like, all right, this is the guy that's going to save the edge rusher room. But, you know, I mean, we've been speaking about him, you know, since the first year of Deep Cover when he was on the Seahawks and just how much of a menace he was, back in that game and what the Ravens had to do to kind of, you know, game plan around him because he was a game wrecker. And that's what he's always been. I mean, granted, he's never had the flashy stats and, you know, the gaudy sack numbers, but he's always been a disruptor, always. And, you know, he's come here and, you know, he's definitely exceeded my expectations of him. You know, when you talk about David Ojabo and Odafe Oweh going down, you know, him and Kyle Van Noy, you know, they've been a godsend for this team. Because they have, you know, brought a level of physicality and a level of discipline to this team where you don't have to worry about, are these guys going to get, you know, outside of themselves and try to do too much, which you could see with, you know, with young players, because that's just what they do. They're overzealous. They're like puppies. You know, they kind of forget their responsibilities and just, you know, go chase something. But with these old vets, they know the tricks, you know, they know how this goes. And it's, you know, the Ravens have been lucky as hell to get these two guys so late in the game and have them make the impact that they're having. And now that they have Oweh practicing, hopefully, you know, it's wheels up soon. And whenever Tyus comes back, you know, whenever Tyus stops defying John Harbaugh's medical advice, you know, it's going to be wheels up.
Hey, we heard it from the horse's mouth on his own show. Ty said he feel good. He said, man, I feel good. I'm working, you know, getting my body right. And when I'm ready to be out there, I'll be out there. So, you know, Harbaugh came back after that and said, well, I think they're meeting with some doctors this week. Ty said, they don't got no doctors on his show. So who knows what's going on there? We talked about it in our little group chat that how he probably handles a lot of things really well as a head coach, but this injury thing might be the thing he handles the worst. He might be one of the worst at handling it in the league in terms of head coach. And just, I don't know why. It just baffles me why he continues to do it this way. When I'm like, you can make it really simple. Even if you don't believe it and you still have this old school mindset, just, you know, for your team, right? For these players that you say it's all about the players. You know, the game is always about the players. We care about the players. And just, hey, look, right? Doctors may have cleared this player, right? So medically, that means they're cleared to be out on the field and get back to practice and maybe even play in the game. But at the end of the day, these guys got to listen to their bodies. And if their bodies aren't right, then, you know, they'll be out there when their bodies are right. And that trumps everything. It'd be so simple to say, instead of saying, well, you got to ask Tyus, or you got to ask Ron. Or you got it. Like, what are they going to tell us that you couldn't tell us? I don't understand why he makes that so hard.
It's so damn dumb. just like, why are you doing that to a veteran guy like Tyus? Like, a guy who, I mean, when do we hear stuff about Tyus being, like, in any kind of negative light?
Yeah, other than the notebook stuff, right? The fire G-Ross. That was the only time. He allegedly was the one who did that.
but it's like to do that to a vet dude who, you know, he's worked his way back from a major injury before. And obviously he knows his body. Like, this isn't just some, you know, young dude who dealing with a first time injury. This guy knows his body. So for you to just, you know, kind of hang him out to dry like that again, because he did this with Ronnie, like you said, it just shows that, you know, that simple old school mindset that he has of, well, the doctors say you're good, so you got to be good. It's just, you're not tough enough. You're not toughing it out. And I don't subscribe to that shit. You know, these guys know their bodies. You know, the doctors, yeah, they could say, like, yeah, you're good, but the doctors don't know a player's body more than the player.
Doctor ain't going out on that field and going through practice.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So they know what he's feeling when he goes to plant and cut, when he goes to bend, when he goes to, like, really open up his stride and try to run or change direction. They don't know what they're feeling.
Yeah. And you could look at all the imaging you want and all of that bullshit, which is fine. You know, there's a place for that. But when you hear Stefania Bell talk about injury, she says, yeah, like, players can medically be fine, but they still have to get over that mental hurdle, which is the biggest hurdle in some cases. And it's just like these old school coaches and that old school mindset, they completely throw that out the window. And it's like, no, you just got to get up, get out there. X-rays say you're good. Imaging says you're good. So you got to get out there. And it's like, no, this is a new day and age where these guys are so in tune with their own bodies and how they work and just what they need in order to ramp up and get to where they want to be physically and on the field. And it's like, to throw the dude under the bus like that is just, it's a garbage move. And unfortunately, you know, we've come to expect it from John Harbaugh and his turkey neck.
You know, and it means when a guy says, you know, I'll be out there when I'm ready. You know, when I feel like my body's right, and like Tyus basically said, like, when I feel like I can be out there and play, I'll play. Like, it means what it means what they say it. Like, there's nothing to read it. People are like, what do you mean he'll be out there when he's ready? When he's ready, that's right. Yeah. That's what it means. So it don't matter what a doctor says. It doesn't matter what a scan shows or an image shows. When they're ready, they'll be out there. And you can think whatever the hell you want to think about toughness, about not caring about teammates or whatever. Think whatever you want to think. You sitting at home. You know what I mean? It don't matter. When they're ready, they'll be out there. And I don't think any of these guys on this team that we've seen, you know, deal with injury and have to kind of tell their own story because Harv throws them under the bus. What do we typically find out? It's typically worse than what was even reported. It happened with JK. It happened with Ronnie, where it's like, oh, by the way, in addition to this injury that had been reported, I also had this, and I also had to deal with that, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if it was something similar with Tyus. Like, he hasn't gotten to that point, and he may not, because that's his choice. He ain't got to give out any specific stuff if he don't want to. But I would not be surprised, even if his situation where it's not as cut and dry as what you think it is. And, you know, for the coach to push back and put that on them so that they have to do that, I think it's just bad business, man. You don't have to do that to these guys. You know what I'm saying? You can have their backs more in that situation. And like I said, I think he does a lot of stuff right and handles a lot of situations right as a head coach. But this one, what's he say about being below the line? This is below the line. The way he handled this injury stuff.
Yeah.
Below the line. You could be better than this if you wanted to. There's no reason other than he's just choosing not to. He wanted to be good.
Yeah. To me, it's like if your approach to this is to quote unquote try to motivate a player into playing, like it doesn't work that way with grown men, I don't think. And if you have to try to motivate a guy or push him in that way, then you probably just got the wrong player to begin with. And Tyus hasn't shown anybody that there's any issues with motivation. Again, it's simple. The guy said that when he's ready to get back out there and play, he will get back out there and play. What'll happen is if he goes out there and he's not ready to play and he goes out there and he looks like a shell of himself, everybody will be looking for what's the cap number, what's the cap savings to cut him, you know, next year or, you know, whatever the case may be. So, you know, you can spare me the, oh, he needs to get out there for his team or, you know, this and that. Or, you know, if he goes out there and he's less than 100%, oh, he's tough and he's gutting it out. Okay, well, we'll see what that means, you know, if the guy gets cut down the line or, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, that stuff doesn't feed families. That stuff doesn't, you know, extend guys' career. In fact, it shortens guys' careers trying to come back earlier than what their body is telling them they should. So anybody, Harbs, whoever else, you can miss me with that. The guy knows his body. When he's ready to get back out there, he'll get back out there. You know, we did the same thing. You know, a lot of people did the same thing with Ronnie. And, you know, Ronnie took a hard line approach to it, and he should have. And I think Bowser's doing the same thing. And it's nothing wrong with that. You know, if a guy's clearly doesn't feel like he's ready, then you should trust him. You know, these guys are professionals. You know, they know their bodies better than anybody else. If he knows he's not ready to get out there yet and be himself, then why would you want him out there and potentially hurting the team? You know, we just talked about Clowney. We just talked about Van Noy. You know, we're getting quality contributions from these veterans. Why are you, you know, so worried about rushing this guy out here and he's clearly not ready yet? You know, it's just, like you said, it's just bad business. It's like, there's no place for it.
Mm-hmm. And he did this with Lamar. So if you'll do it with him, you'll do it with anybody. There's no player on the roster who you won't do this to. He did work right with the bone bruiser. Well, hey, you know, doctors say, you know, it's cleared, and you know, I guess he's ready to come out and practice. He'll practice. I mean, this is your franchise quarterback. They had Beatty yet at that time, but I mean, they talked about it. They always talked about him that way. So I'm like, if you'll do that with him, then you'll do that with anybody. And it's not like you said, the motivation thing, that's not working because it hasn't. It's not like any of those guys have been like, okay, like the day after or whatever, Harbaugh makes those comments, like they show up to practice, like, all right, yeah, you're right. You're right. Let me get out there. Nobody has done that. Nobody has done that. They've stayed out until they were ready to come back. And I think I talked about it maybe last season or sometime in the past. Martellus Bennett had talked about that. He's like, look, if you go out there when you're less than 100% or less than, you know, maybe, depending on what point in the season, you might not be 100%. But if you don't feel right and you allow a team and a medical staff or a head coach to go out there and pressure you and be out there before you feel ready to, and you look stank, then he's like, that's on you. Mari said, I blame you because you shouldn't have let them do that to you. If you didn't feel right, don't go out there. And then that way he was like, look, they can talk about you. They can say whatever, but there ain't no tape to use against you. You go out there and look stank. Yeah. They got that tape. They can just say, hey, well, you're not what you were. You know, we thought you were going to come back and look at this and look at that. But he's like, nah, man, I ain't doing none of that. If I'm not right, I will be out there. And they can say whatever they want to say. So I think it's empowering for the players to do that. You know, we all probably, I mean, you could probably do a documentary about the Steve Saunders saga. We don't even know the ins and outs of that. I bet the stories that could come out of there would be crazy. The players talking about stuff that he had them doing. We've heard little tidbits about stuff he was having guys doing when they were injured. But I imagine it's even crazier. So you couldn't even blame these guys. So on the one hand is everything that we just talked about, listening to your body. You know your own body better than anybody else. But then you've got this maniac having you doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and you're like, nah, I ain't trusting him. I'm not putting my body in. Do you see what he's doing? Do you see what's going on?
Yeah,
over there?
He had them doing the Terry Crews workout from my wife and kids.
Yeah. Hell no. Yeah. Do I want to go get a second opinion? Yes. Yes, I absolutely want to go talk to somebody else because this ain't it right now. So, I wish it was something that he was better at. I'm afraid one day it is going to, if it hasn't already, it probably already has. Maybe I just didn't realize that was the reason. It's going to run good players away, right? When there's a contractual situation, there's a chance that they could come back and, you know, maybe it's not like they're that far apart in money or anything. And it comes down to like the little stuff that is always like the most important stuff. Something like that could be the reason why they're like, nah, I can't, I can't come back here and deal with that again. Hopefully the light will go off at some point. Like, even if you just take the Belichick approach, just don't say nothing. Just don't say nothing about it. You can have all of that hate in your heart, but just don't say nothing about it. Just be like, no comment. No comment. I'm not going to comment on injuries. Just leave it at that. Even that would be better than the approach that he's taking. But okay, we spent a lot of time on that. I guess Lions. We won't talk Lions now, or we got.
Well, we tore one coach down, so I want to give another coach. I want to give another coach some flowers. So you know, the coaches won't be too mad at this episode, you know, from us. But Denard Wilson, I want to give this dude his flowers, DB coach. First and foremost, so you look at what we saw them kind of coming into the season. We look at the cornerback group. We had Humphrey, and then we had a bunch of questions. And then we lose Humphrey right away. And so from that, you see them go out on the street and they get a Ronald Darby. Well, Ronald Darby is super solid. You got a Rock Ya-Sin, super solid when he plays. You got a Brandon Stevens having a career year. Now you get Humphrey back. Look at the safeties. Matter of fact, before we even get to the safeties, you got Ardarius Washington stepping in nickel spot, competing. You lose Ardarius, you get Arthur Mallette come in and play better than Ardarius was playing. And you flip back to the safeties, you got Geno Stone having a career year. You got Kyle Hamilton balling out. Got Marcus Williams, you know, gutting through it.
The Winter Soldier, shout out.
The piggyback on Fire Zone, Denard Melton. And I looked up the stat after I heard it, you know, heard him talking about it on the episode. Ravens are number one in net yards gained per pass attempt right now in the entire NFL. And this would be one thing that you could maybe try to like explain it away by just a scheme based thing, you know, their zone based team. They play the sixth most man coverage in the NFL. So it's a lot of zone, but it's also man too. And so, you know, like you're going to look at this at the end of the year. And to me, this is going to be one of the best coaching jobs you're going to see in the NFL from a position coach, period. It's been nothing short of remarkable what he's been able to do with this group. And so, you know, I just wanted to take some time out because, you know, position coaches, a lot of times they don't really get love. But when I started like really thinking about it and just, you know, again, like I just broke it down, like going through top to bottom, like, he has these dudes playing good ball. And we've talked about it before, you know, with the tackling. Everybody's tackling. Entire secondary. Every single person is tackling. Everybody's where they're supposed to be. You know, you don't have guys wide open shrieking in the secondary. You know, guys are close to making plays. Guys are getting their hands on balls, making plays. So, you know, just shout out to Denard Wilson for that, man. Like, this is going to, you know, eventually it's going to catapult him into, you know, the higher ranks. But, you know, I'm glad for right now that he's Ravens coach.
It's been seamless too, man. I mean, all of those changes you talked about, you could kind of see it. A classic example in the Titans game, right? When Marcus goes down, Kyle gets ejected. So Stone's got to come in. Brandon Stevens has got to go from corner to safety. And you would think, okay, hey, now we're going to take advantage, right? This guy hasn't been playing safety all year. He's back there. We're going to find a way to isolate this guy. We're going to go at him. Or Rocky Sin comes in and corner, or Darby has a real, okay, let's go get you. You're not going after anybody. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, oh, we got one. Where's Waldo situation? All right, let's find Waldo and go get him. They're not able to do that because of how solid these guys are playing, how disciplined they are. I mean, what's crazy about Brandon Stevens, as much as sometimes people get frustrated with him being like right there and not making the play, they're not going at him. They're actually going after Marlon Humphrey instead of Brandon Stevens, which is crazy. Now, some of that's probably because they know Marlon, not 100%. So those tables make it turned eventually, but they're not really throwing at Brandon Stevens like they used to. So it's been crazy, man, sitting watching, how they play on that back end. And it's like, there's not a lot of star power, quote unquote star power back there. I mean, we know Humphrey is a star, but like you said, he's been out and he's not even 100% back. Marcus Williams is a legit dude, but Winter Soldier's been banged up. So, and then Kyle is, I think he's going to be a star. And I think he's already playing at a really, really high level, but he's probably not there yet. So it's a real cast of characters back there, but numbers don't lie. You know what I'm saying? The numbers don't lie. And you're right. Credit to Denard Wilson, Chris Hewitt, all those guys, coaching in the secondary. Go talk to your boy. Go talk to your head man. Tell him chill out. Anyway. Lions now? We'll go Lions now, are we?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I feel like, Chris, I mean, this should be like your whole life section. This one of your teams, man. This your squad.
Yeah, man. Lions, I've been keeping track of them for the last couple of years. I like what they're doing. I like the staff that Campbell brought in, Dan Campbell brought in. And just his whole philosophy of building that staff, where he doesn't want the smartest X's and O's guy, but then the personality wise, the guy's a jackass, he's the smartest person in the room, or wants to be the smartest person in the room. He wants guys who can do the X's and O's, but also fit the personality and the culture that he was trying to build in Detroit. And I commend that so much, because what you usually just see is, everybody wants to, the last 5 years or so, it was the guys who, were butt buddies with Sean McVay. Those were the hot guys. Everybody wanted those dudes. And I like the approach that Dan Campbell had. And, it's coming to fruition now, with his team being, clearly one of the best teams in the league right now. And he's still like you still see that his fingerprints aren't even fully embedded into this team yet, right? And they're at the place that they're in now. So I think this is going to be the Ravens' biggest test of the season. Just dealing with this offense. Shout out to Jared Goff, because a lot of people just thought he was dead in the water. A lot of people thought he was just holding a roster spot for whoever Dan Campbell wanted to bring in as his quarterback. And, Jared Goff, he's taking his game to another level. I know people like to rag on him and stuff like that, but if you watch him play, he's been playing at a high level. And he's not really doing it with a cast of superstars like you see with Tua. Not to take anything away from Tua, but he's not doing it with a Waddle and a Tyreek Hill. And that's not to take anything away from Amon-Ra St. Brown, but we're talking about Tyreek Hill, one of the best, if not the best wide receiver in the game right now. And Jalen Waddle, who's one of the best young wide receivers in the game. And you know, just what they're doing down there. And then, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs, I know he's coming back off the injury, but David Montgomery, he won't be playing, but still just that whole run game and what they're able to do and the advantage that they're able to have against certain defenses and looks is it's kind of like a chameleon. They could do so many things, like especially now with Jameson Williams in the mix. Now they have somebody who can take the top off and open things up in the middle for an Amon-Ra St. Brown or, you know, Sam Laporta, who's, you know, probably the best wide receiver of all time. I mean, the best tight end of all time. So it's going to be a big test for the Ravens offense. I mean, for the Ravens defense to slow those guys down. But, you know, I'm excited to see this because, like I said to start it off, this is the biggest test that they've had. So I want to see how this team responds at home in a big spot against this team.
Yeah, shout out to Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes because, you know, he orchestrated that, you know, that trade for Goff. You know, a guy who had come from the Rams who knew what Jared Goff was about. And I think the one thing that, you know, if you're just a casual fan, don't really follow the Rams or whatever. I didn't, you know, until I started digging in a little bit more once he got to Detroit. Something that seemed to be a consistent thing that you hear about him from teammates and you see it in how he plays is just the toughness. He's a tough dude. He will hang in the pocket. He will take shots. He'll just, you know, continue to stand in there and make throws. And he seems to be the kind of dude that, you know, other guys in the locker room like. You know, they rally behind him because they're like, hey, Jared, man, he's here to win. He ain't getting caught up in the stuff that people say about him, about he's not this and he's not that. He's just here to win. And I guess you could see it during that season that Hard Knocks was following them. The culture that they were building, everything was about competition. Compete, 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 right? The coaches are competing. The position coaches are competing against each other every day. The players are obviously competing against each other. He was just building this culture of competition and toughness. And so you see that when you watch them play. It literally, you see it on the tape, just how tough, how hard they play, how much they compete. And, you know, Aaron Glenn, you know, I think he's finally kind of starting to mold this image, to mold this defense and his image, like what he wanted to see. Because you know, people may remember him back in the day as a DB, just scrappy as hell. He's a scrappy dude, man. And then Ben Johnson is like a mad scientist on offense, man. I mean, when those boys cross over midfield and get into their opponent's territory, you will literally see everything. I told you I was watching that Seattle game, the one game that they had lost, and they're running flea flickers, they're running wildcat, they got throwback screens, you know, they got all kinds of stuff going on. They got every run you can think of. One play looked like a single wing play where it's like a sweep to Amon-Ra St. Brown, but he's lined up in the slot like a wing T type of play. So I was like, oh boy, they run it all. So that's a handful in and of itself to prepare for that type of offense. And then, you know, like I said, you flip it over to Aaron Glenn's side of the ball in the defense, and you just got a bunch of, you know, guys, lunch pail type dudes, man. They're just out there working and grinding, and they're just going to keep coming after you play after play. And we saw this. I mean, the staff was a little bit different, and players were a little bit different a couple of years ago, right, when the Ravens, what was that, 2021, when they went up there and played them? And that was a close game. Mm-hmm.
Right? That was the Tucker kick.
Yeah, it took a record-setting kick to beat that team. So, you know, Ravens have a little bit of familiarity with some of their personnel and some of the schemes and the stuff that they do. And you know, you knew back then from that game that it was going to be a battle. And they weren't as good then as they are now. So, you know, like you said, I'm expecting a real stiff test, a real, real stiff test. If the Ravens can find a way to get this one, I think, you know, you can feel pretty good about, you know, what your ceiling is as a team. If you can beat a team that's playing this well as good as they are, then I think you can feel like, hey, we can play with anybody. Right? We can play with anybody in this league and beat anybody in this league if we go out and do all the things that we need to do. And I think they can do it. I definitely think the Ravens can do it. They've got the people. We've seen the flashes. It's just about, you know, being consistent. And they really haven't had that game yet, where they're like, a 60, like Ray said, you know, I used to say back in the day, the 60-minute ball club. You know, we haven't really seen that yet. And I think that this is a great opportunity for them to show that they are a 60-minute ball club and you know, come out with a win on this. But I'm fully expecting it to be a gut-wrencher, a stomach churn. You're sitting there watching, you're like, oh! I'm fully expecting that. Because that's the Ravens, though, for real. Like, it almost doesn't matter who they play. Like, that just seems to be how so many of me. We had 2019, and 2019 was like, here you go. Right? It was like a gift from the football guy. We know what y'all been dealing with watching these Ravens offenses. After that Browns game, which, you know, those first couple of games, you're like, okay, this is more of the same. Right? Aside from the Dolphins, right? So you start off with the Dolphins, you're like, okay, this is a whole new day, right? And then Arizona, a little bit of a slog. KC's tough, right? Browns come in and kind of jump on you. And then after that, it's like,
smooth sailing.
This is a gift. This is a gift from the football guys. They gave us the gift of Lamar Demetrius Jackson. It just blessed us with it. But now it's kind of back to, you know, what we've seen before, where it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a grind, but hey, that's okay. As long as you come out with the dub at the end of the day, it ain't about style points. You know what I mean? It ain't about how it looks. But man, I tell you, I would love it if they would like just jump the Lions. They beat these Lions by like 14 or like 21 and just show like, look, nah, y'all good. No disrespect, y'all good. But we're on another level. Like, I would love to see that. I don't think I'm going to see it. I think it's going to be a close game. But I would love to see them just like come out and like just thump them.
But, you know. Yeah, it would be nice, man. But one thing I'm definitely looking forward to is Ben Johnson versus Mike McDonald, man. That's gonna be that's pay per view right there. See those two go toe to toe. That's gonna be real interesting. But one thing I will say, I've been seeing like a lot of talk about the Lions defense, and while I do think that their defense is good, it's improved, they play hard, they play tough, like if you look at their schedule, they have been pretty beneficial from a quarterback standpoint. Week three, they get the Falcons with Ritter. Week four, Jordan Love, a guy that I still holding out hope for. I think he's had some upside, but you can tell he's still trying to work his way. And, you know, that's to be expected, you know, a quarter of the way into your actual starting career as a quarterback. Then after that, you get Carolina, Bryce Young. And no knock at Bryce Young, but, you know, he just don't have the weapons. They don't seem to have, you know, imaginative offense yet. You will see what Thomas Brown brings, you know, rooting for him. And then Tampa Bay, you know, Baker Mayfield, he's been solid. He's been better than, you know, I would have expected, but, you know, not lighting the world on fire by any means. So, So I'm not ready to say that this Detroit defense has necessarily, you know, arrived. And, you know, I remember the last time we played them, you would think that they arrived, but, you know, Hollywood just dropped a couple bombs, you know, was basically what it came down to. So, you know, on that side of the ball, like, I think that's going to be an interesting test to see where the Ravens offense is, because, you know, honestly, man, I look at the way Lamar is playing, and he looks like a point guard to me. Like, he looks like he's in command. He's out there distributing the ball. He knows where to go. There's a calm to the way that he's playing. There's a blow up coming for him soon. Like, I don't know exactly when it's going to be. I don't know exactly what the circumstances. You know, maybe when Odell Beckham or Bateman is ready to you know, play more snaps, whatever it is. But I feel like there is an explosion coming soon with him, and it could be as early as this week. I hope that's the case. But, you know, I feel like he's close to something. And, you know, that and just, again, just coming back to that Ben Johnson versus Mike McDonald matchup, that's going to be interesting. You know, something that I saw, a quote from Ben Johnson that's just stuck out in my head ever since I saw it when I was kind of studying their offense last year. He wants to create the illusion of complexity.
He damn sure
would
do that.
And that's exactly what he does.
Damn sure
would
do that.
So, you know, I can't wait to see how McDonald combats that, how he prepares for it. And, you know, it's just going to be an interesting game. And like Chris said, it's going to be a measuring stick kind of game for this Ravens team, because this is a Lions team that is good, that is sound, that they protect very well, great offensive line. You know, they probably will be without their left guard, Jonah Jackson, for this one. And that's a matchup, that backup, that's a matchup that the Ravens are going to need to dominate, because this is a team that is deadly in play action. And part of the reason they're deadly in play action, besides Goff being on point with the timing, is their offensive line affords him a lot of time. Like, he is super comfortable in that pocket, and they're going to have to figure out a way to make him uncomfortable. And, you know, some of it is going to be scheme, obviously, but, you know, it's going to be some times where some guys are going to have to win some one-on-ones, and part of that, you know, they're going to have to really work over that backup left guard. Because if you give them time to execute that play action game, they can hit you in breaking. They can hit you down the field with three or four different dudes. They can hit you with that tight end down the seam after the catch, whatever it is. There's a lot of different ways they can cut you, but they can cut you.
They sure can. They got that offensive line, Chris. That's you know, we were talking about it. We were talking about some of the draft picks. That's the kind of build that I would like to see the Ravens. I mean, think about Taylor Decker at left tackle, Jonah Jackson when he's healthy at left guard, Frank Ragnow at center, Glasgow at right guard, and Penei Sewell at right tackle. I mean, that's a whole line, right? You put together something like that, and they don't, you know, Goff is obviously a more veteran quarterback. It's not like, we were talking about Lamar and trying to make sure you keep him protected. But, man, if you could build something like that around Lamar in terms of an offensive line, I mean, that's probably as critical to the Lions' turnaround as anything else, is just, you know, what they've done in the trenches on both sides of the ball.
Yep. And that's where it all starts. I mean, you don't have an offensive line, you won't run the ball. You don't have an offensive line, it's going to be difficult to pass the ball, which means your quarterback might be getting killed. And that's where it all starts.
Yeah, so, you know, this guy, number 74, I'm not going to act like I can pronounce his name. But he was the guy who played left guard for Jonah Jackson, and you know he had his struggles. We saw one of our draft moves, Kalijah Cansey, got after him a couple times for the Bucks. The Bucks got a nice little defensive line down there. There's some guys who we've kind of liked in different drafts, going from Logan Hall to Cansey to Joe Schrenker Triad. I mean, they got some dudes on that offensive line who could kind of get after it a little bit. So it was a good test for this Detroit line. And the other thing that I saw, because, you know, they were playing, you know, Todd Bowles' defense, is you're going to get all kinds of pressures coming from all kinds of places. And it seemed like the linebacker pressures gave them a little bit of trouble. Like, they had some communication issues. And some of that could have been having a backup left guard in, having Montgomery go out and Craig Reynolds have to step in and play running back. And so, you know, maybe some communication stuff, guys who hadn't worked in some of those protections as much as other guys. And maybe they get that cleaned up this week. But they seem to have a little bit of issue. We know McDonald likes to use his linebackers in pressure, especially PQ, but, you know, he'll send row too. He loves to use his linebackers in pressure. So that could be something that they, you know, maybe it's what they do anyway, but it could be something that they look to, you know, be a part of the game plan even a little bit more. this week. If they see some stuff too, they're like, hey, we might be able to exploit some stuff here, because they had some trouble like switching when you run some of those pick stunts that they run with like PQ and Matabike or whatever. And, you know, a lot of times you'll switch that off, right? And you want big on big, right? So you want your offensive lineman to stay on Matabike, and maybe a running back picks up PQ or whatever. Well, they had times where it was like Craig Reynolds was trying to pick up a DT. And like that is or DN who's looping in. I'm like, you do not want that. You do not want them big old goons on your running back. So I know that's something that they saw and will probably try to, you know, get adjusted. But if they don't, I think that's something that, you know, you can look for. And you got what, Ravens tied for the lead league in sacks, man. It seems like a far cry from where we were this summer. We're like, where's the pass rush gonna come from? Well, it's come from people who weren't even on the team at the time. But that's what you get sometimes, right? You never know how this stuff is gonna go. Me and Denaro was talking about, you know, we already talked about Clowney and Van Noy, but we're like both watching Van Noy separately. And we haven't really talked to him. We talked about him a whole lot on the show. We're like, that man has used in three games, maybe every pass rush known to man. Like every move that there is, he's used them all. He just came off the couch and was like, I'm gonna show every single move, not just like every move that he has, like every pass rush move in the history of the game. He's used them all. There's not any move you can name that he has not used. You know, some more effect than others, but it's interesting watching them both, those two guys, because of that contradiction, right? Clowney's not gonna throw a whole bunch of moves at you. He's just gonna try to run through you. Whereas Van Noy, he can work power too, but he's going to hit you with a plethora of moves just to kind of like get your head spinning. I mean, he hit their left tackle, the Titans left tackle, with at least three spin moves. He hit him with like a couple inside spins, he hit him with an outside spin. He's just going to try to like get you dizzy with pass rush moves so you can't get a bead on what's coming. You know, because he's throwing so many different moves. You're just like, what do I even try to anticipate? They're all coming. He's using them all. So it's kind of crazy. But what a surprise. Who would have known? You know, we're thinking about Ajabo. We're thinking about Owe. They get hurt. Who would have known? And then Matabike, you know, has been balling.
Man, speaking of couches, the washing that bat, every lineman that tried to block Matabike looked like they were holding the couch, trying to back it out of their house or something like that, just scrambling, just holding on for dear life. That dude was on a heater.
Especially their right guard. I don't know who their right guard was, but he was having some trouble. He was having some real trouble with Justin Matabike. But that was the big, I was telling Denard, that was one of the big differences with this Tennessee team. Cause like you think about Vrabel, and you know, they want to be tough, they want to be physical, and they still got Henry, but they don't have the ass kickers on the O-line that they used to have, like just a few years ago. I mean, they had like not household names per se, but like Ben Jones, even, you know, Taylor Lewan when he was healthy, the guard who He was a vet guy.
Roger Saffold.
Yeah, Sam. I mean, they just had like some dogs on the offensive line when they were like in their prime of being physical. And they're just young now on the offensive line. You know, they got a lot of young guys out there, and you know, it's different. It's different. They still got that mindset of how they want to play, but they just don't have the same type of dudes right now. Maybe those young guys grow into that. You know, Skaronski's young. Dillard, who came over from the Eagles, Petit Ferrer, you know, they got some young guys, but time will tell. But that was like real obvious to me, like watching them, like this is not the same offensive line that they'd had in past years. But Detroit is like the flip side of that. They got that type of offensive line for sure. So yeah, it's gonna be fun. That's gonna be really fun just to watch all of those battles. Like you said, there's so many matchups, there's so many battles on both sides of the ball. That, you know, this is just like a heavyweight fight, man, you know. So we're gonna see. We're gonna see who come out on top.
Yep.
Anything else y'all want to hit on? Are we feel good about where we at?
We've
done?
Yeah, feel good about it.
Yeah, I think we hit everything.
What we've given to people. All right, people. They feel good, I feel good. So we're gonna get up out of here. And you know, we'll see y'all in another 4 weeks. No, I'm just playing. I do kind of like that idea Chris was talking about earlier about like, who, or was it Kerry? Somebody said, hey, only podcast when they win. Don't do no podcast. I kind of like that idea. You can call me a front runner. I don't care. Call me what you want. But it's just more fun to talk about everything when they win because, look, I'm not going to name no names. Y'all know who you are. But Ravens Twitter, them Ravens Twitter streets after the loss, y'all be talking real reckless. Real reckless. Okay. Super reckless. Some of the stuff that y'all be saying. Y'all should really be, what was that Shannon Sharp? Y'all better stop tweeting that nonsense. They're gonna ban y'all from being on Twitter if y'all keep tweeting this misinformation that y'all have put out there. just take it easy, okay? Just take it easy. Teams lose. It's the NFL. You ain't got to be trying to fire people and cut people and trade people. Like, goddamn. Mm-hmm. You lost a game. It happens. What happens when you take an L in life? What you do? You just ready to just jump ship? Get rid of your wife? Get rid of your boss? All right, hold on. Let me chill. That's how you know it's time to go. I start thinking about this stuff. Because I just, you know, I don't respond to it. I just be scrolling through it. I've gotten a lot better at that. Y'all know I used to get out there getting some crazy stuff with people. But now I just be scrolling through it. But even just scrolling, I'm like, you're wrong, man.
Yeah, you see some wild stuff out there, man.
What's going on, man? It hurt people, you know? Y'all need that red table talk. Maybe not. That's kind of we might have had a little. Maybe we've had enough of Jada for a while. I think. I don't think I need any more Jada right now. It's been too much. All right, let's get out of here. Hey, look, y'all know what to do. Subscribe, like, share. Be good out there in them streets, and let's go out next time.
Tire, check out the robe, I'm fresh like a pope. I'm doing my dance on catamarans and you got a coat. I'm counting my blessings, we ain't stressing, just look at this glow. I got that magic, I'm really prepared for whatever, whenever. So who wants to smoke? Came back from the future to take all y'all niggas and take all y'all whores. They said I was by, yeah baby I'm by a whole nother coast. She stay in the hills, he stay in Atlanta, I pay for them both. My face got don't come with a limit, I swipe it, I spin it, I swear I be doing the most. Look, float on my float on this float. They hit.